So much for a tender farewell. The last Jason saw of his dad, Zeus was 100 feet tall, holding the Argo II by its prow. He boomed, "Hold on!" Then he tossed the ship up and spiked it overhand like a volleyball. If Jason hadn't been strapped to the mast with one of Leo's 20-point safety harnesses, he would have disintegrated. As it was, his stomach tried to stay behind in grease, and all the air was sucked out of his lungs. The sky turned black. The ship rattled and creaked. The deck cracked like thin ice under Jason's legs, and with a sonic boom, the Argo II hurtled out of the clouds.
"Jason!" Leo shouted. "Hurry!"
His fingers felt like melted plastic, but Jason managed to undo the straps. Leo was lashed to the control console, desperately trying to right the ship, as they spiraled downward in free fall. The sails were on fire. Festus creaked in alarm. A catapult peeled away and lifted into the air. Centrifugal force sent the shields flying off the railings like metal frisbees. Wider cracks opened in the deck as Jason staggered toward the hold, using the winds to keep himself anchored. If he couldn't make it to the others... Then the hatch burst open. Frank and Hazel stumbled through, pulling on the guide rope they'd attached to the mast. Piper, Annabeth, and Percy followed, all of them looking disoriented.
"Go!" Leo yelled. "Go, go, go!"
For once, Leo's tone was deadly serious. They'd talked through their evacuation plan, but that slap across the world had made Jason's mind sluggish. Judging from the others' expressions, they weren't in much better shape. Buford, the table, saved them. He clattered across the deck with his holographic hedge blaring,
"Let's go! Move it! Cut that out!"
Then, his tabletop split into helicopter blades, and Buford buzzed away. Frank changed form. Instead of a dazed demigod, he was now a dazed gray dragon. Hazel climbed onto his neck. Frank grabbed Percy and Annabeth in his front claws, then spread his wings and soared away. Jason held Piper by the waist, ready to fly, but he made the mistake of glancing down. The view was a spinning kaleidoscope of sky, earth, sky, earth. The ground was getting awfully close.
"Leo, you won't make it!" Jason shouted. "Come with us!"
"No, get out of here!"
"Leo!"
Piper tried.
"Please!"
"Save your charm speak, Pipes. I told you, I've got a plan. Now shoo!"
Jason took a last look at the splintering ship. The Argo II had been their home for so long. Now they were abandoning it for good, and leaving Leo behind. Jason hated it, but he saw the determination in Leo's eyes. Just like the visit with his father Zeus, there was no time for a proper goodbye. Jason harnessed the winds, and he and Piper shot into the sky. The ground wasn't much less chaotic. As they plummeted down, Jason saw a vast array of monsters spread across the hill. Cynocephali, two-headed men, wild centaurs, ogres, and others he couldn't even name, surrounding two tiny islands of demigods. At the crest of Half-Blood Hill, gathered at the feet of the Athena Parthenos, was the main force of Camp Half-Blood, along with the 1st and 5th cohorts, rallied around the Golden Eagle of the Legion. The other 3 Roman cohorts were in a defensive formation several 100 yards away and seemed to be taking the brunt of the attack. Giant eagles circled Jason, screeching urgently as if looking for orders. Frank the Gray Dragon flew alongside with his passengers.
"Hazel!" Jason yelled. "Those 3 cohorts are in trouble. If they don't merge with the rest of the demigods..."
"On it!"
Hazel said.
"Go, Frank!"
Dragon Frank veered to the left with Annabeth in one claw yelling,
"Let's get him!"
And Percy in the other claw screaming,
"I hate flying!"
Piper and Jason veered right toward the summit of Half-Blood Hill. Jason's heart lifted when he saw Nico DeAngelo on the front lines with the Greeks, slashing his way through a crowd of two-headed men. A few feet away, Reyna sat astride a new Pegasus, her sword drawn. She shouted orders at the Legion, and the Romans obeyed without question, as if she'd never been away. Jason didn't see Octavian anywhere. Good. Neither did he see a colossal Earth goddess laying waste to the world. Very good. Perhaps Gia had risen, taken one look at the modern world, and decided to go back to sleep. Jason wished they could be that lucky, but he doubted it. He and Piper landed on the hill, their swords drawn, and a cheer went up from the Greeks and the Romans.
"About time," Reyna called. "Glad you could join us."
With a start, Jason realized she was addressing Piper, not him. Piper grinned.
"We had some giants to kill."
"Excellent,"
Reyna returned the smile.
"Help yourself to some barbarians."
"Why, thank you."
The two girls launched into battle, side by side. Nico nodded to Jason as if they'd just seen each other 5 minutes ago, then went back to turning two-headed men into no-headed corpses.
"Good timing. Where's the ship?"
Jason pointed. The Argo II streaked across the sky in a ball of fire, shedding burning chunks of mast, hull, and armament. Jason didn't see how even fireproof Leo could survive in that inferno, but he had to hope.
"Gods," Nico said. "Is everyone okay?"
"Leo."
Jason's voice broke.
"He said he had a plan."
The comet disappeared behind the western hills. Jason waited with dread for the sound of an explosion, but he heard nothing over the roar of battle. Nico met his eyes.
"He'll be fine."
"Sure.
But just in case. For Leo."
"For Leo,"
Jason agreed. They charged into the fight. Jason's anger gave him renewed strength. The Greeks and Romans slowly pushed back the enemies. Wild centaurs toppled. Wolf-headed men howled as they were cut to ashes. More monsters kept appearing. Carpoy grain spirits swirling out of the grass, griffins diving from the sky, lumpy clay humanoids that made Jason think of evil Play-Doh men.
"They're ghosts with earthen shells," Nico warned. "Don't let them hit you."
Obviously, Gia had kept some surprises in reserve. At one point, Will Solis, the lead camper for Apollo, ran up to Nico and said something in his ear. Over the yelling and clashing blades, Jason couldn't hear the words.
"Jason, I have to go,"
Nico said. Jason didn't really understand, but he nodded, and Will and Nico dashed off into the fray. A moment later, a squad of Hermes campers gathered around Jason for no apparent reason. Connor Stoll grinned.
"What's up, Grace?"
"I'm good,"
Jason said.
"You?"
Connor dodged an ogre club and stabbed a grain spirit, which exploded in a cloud of wheat.
"Yeah, can't complain. Nice day for it."
Reyna yelled,
"Eaculare flammas!"
And a wave of flaming arrows arced over the Legion's shield wall, destroying a platoon of ogres. The Roman ranks moved forward, impaling centaurs and trampling wounded ogres under their bronze-tipped boots. Somewhere downhill, Jason heard Frank Jong yell in Latin,
"Repulere equites!"
A massive herd of centaurs parted in a panic as the Legion's other three cohorts plowed through in perfect formation, their spears bright with monster blood. Frank marched before them. On the left flank, riding Orion, Hazel beamed with pride.
"Ave, Praetor Jong,"
Reyna called.
"Ave, Praetor Ramirez Arellano,"
Frank said.
"Let's do this! Legion, close ranks!"
A cheer went up among the Romans as the five cohorts melded into one massive killing machine. Frank pointed his sword forward, and from the Golden Eagle standard, tendrils of lightning swept across the enemy, turning several hundred monsters to toast.
"Legion! Cuneum formate!" Reyna yelled. "Advance!"
Another cheer on Jason's right as Percy and Annabeth reunited with the forces of Camp Half-Blood.
"Greeks!" Percy yelled. "Let's, fight stuff!"
They yelled like banshees and charged. Jason grinned. He loved the Greeks. They had no organization whatsoever, but they made up for it with enthusiasm. Jason was feeling good about the battle, except for two big questions. Where was Leo? And where was Gia? Unfortunately, he got the second answer first. Under his feet, the earth rippled as if Half-Blood Hill had become a giant water mattress. Demigods fell, ogres slipped, centaurs charged face first into the grass.
"Awake!"
A voice boomed all around them. 100 yards away, at the crest of the next hill, the grass and dirt swirled upward like the point of a massive drill. The column of earth thickened into the 20-foot-tall figure of a woman, her dress woven from blades of grass, her skin as white as quartz, her hair brown and tangled like tree roots.
"Little fools!"
Gia, the Earth Mother, opened her pure green eyes.
"The paltry magic of your statue cannot contain me."
As she said it, Jason realized why Gia hadn't appeared until now. The Athena Parthenos had been protecting the demigods, holding back the wrath of the Earth. But even Athena's might could only last so long against a primordial goddess. Fear as palpable as a cold front washed over the demigod army.
"Stand fast!"
Piper shouted, her charm speak clear and loud.
"Greeks and Romans, we can fight her together!"
Gia laughed. She spread her arms and the earth bent toward her. Trees tilting, bedrock groaning, soil rippling in waves. Jason rose on the wind, but all around him, monsters and demigods alike started to sink into the ground. One of Octavian's onagers capsized and disappeared into the side of the hill.
"The whole earth is my body,"
Gia boomed.
"How would you fight the goddess of..." Phoomp!
In a flash of bronze, Gia was swept off the hillside, snarled in the claws of a 50-ton metal dragon. Festus, reborn, rose into the sky on gleaming wings, spewing fire from his maw triumphantly. As he ascended, the rider on his back got smaller and more difficult to discern. But Leo's grin was unmistakable.
"Pipes, Jason!" he shouted down. "You coming? The fight is up here."
Chapter 52. Jason. As soon as Gia achieved liftoff, the ground solidified. Demigods stopped sinking, though many were still buried up to their waists. Sadly, the monsters seemed to be digging themselves out more quickly. They charged the Greek and Roman ranks, taking advantage of the demigods' disorganization. Jason put his arms around Piper's waist. He was about to take off when Percy yelled,
"Wait! Frank can fly the rest of us up there! We can all..."
"No, man," Jason said. "They need you here. There's still an army to defeat. Besides, the prophecy..."
"He's right."
Frank gripped Percy's arm.
"You have to let them do this, Percy. It's like Annabeth's quest in Rome, or Hazel at the doors of death. This part can only be them."
Percy obviously didn't like it, but at that moment a flood of monsters swept over the Greek forces. Annabeth called to him.
"Hey, problem over here!"
Percy ran to join her. Frank and Hazel turned to Jason. They raised their arms in the Roman salute, then ran off to regroup the Legion. Jason and Piper spiraled upward on the wind.
"I've got the cure," Piper murmured like a chant. "It'll be fine. I've got the cure."
Jason realized she'd lost her sword somehow during the battle, but he doubted it would matter. Against Gia, a sword would do no good. This was about storm and fire, and a third power, Piper's charm speak, which would hold them together. Last winter, Piper had slowed the power of Gia at the Wolf House, helping to free Hera from a cage of earth. Now, she would have an even bigger job. As they ascended, Jason gathered the wind and clouds around him. The sky responded with frightening speed. Soon, they were in the eye of a maelstrom. Lightning burned his eyes. Thunder made his teeth vibrate. Directly above them, Festus grappled with the Earth Goddess. Gia kept disintegrating, trying to trickle back to the ground, but the winds kept her aloft. Festus sprayed her with flames, which seemed to force her into solid form. Meanwhile, from Festus's back, Leo blasted the goddess with flames of his own and hurled insults.
"Potty sludge! Dirt face! This is for my mother, Esperanza Valdez!"
His whole body was wreathed in fire. Rain hung in the stormy air, but it only sizzled and steamed around him. Jason zoomed toward them. Gia turned into loose white sand, but Jason summoned a squadron of Venti, who churned around her, constraining her in a cocoon of wind. Gia fought back. When she wasn't disintegrating, she lashed out with shrapnel blasts of stone and soil that Jason barely deflected. Stoking the storm, containing Gia, keeping himself and Piper aloft, Jason had never done anything so difficult. He felt like he was covered in lead weights, trying to swim with only his legs while holding a car over his head. But he had to keep Gia off the ground. That was the secret Kim had hinted at when they spoke at the bottom of the sea. Long ago, Ouranos, the sky god, had been tricked down to the earth by Gia and the Titans. They'd held him on the ground so he couldn't escape, and, with his powers weakened from being so far from his home territory, they'd been able to cut him apart. Now, Jason, Leo, and Piper had to reverse that scenario. They had to keep Gia away from her source of power, the Earth, and weaken her until she could be defeated. Together they rose. Festus creaked and groaned with the effort, but he continued to gain altitude. Jason still didn't understand how Leo had managed to remake the dragon. Then, he recalled all the hours Leo had spent working inside the hall over the last few weeks. Leo must have been planning this all along, and building a new body for Festus within the framework of the ship. He must have known in his gut that the Argo II would eventually fall apart. A ship turning into a dragon? Jason supposed it was no more amazing than the dragon turning into a suitcase back in Quebec. However it had happened, Jason was elated to see their old friend in action once more.
"You cannot defeat me!"
Gia crumbled to sand, only to get blasted by more flames. Her body melted into a lump of glass, shattered, then reformed again as human.
"I am eternal!" "Eternally annoying!"
Leo yelled, and he urged Festus higher. Jason and Piper rose with them.
"Get me closer," Piper urged. "I need to be next to her."
"Piper, the flames and the shrapnel."
"I know."
Jason moved in until they were right next to Gia. The winds encased the goddess, keeping her solid, but it was all Jason could do to contain her blasts of sand and soil. Her eyes were solid green, like all nature had been condensed into a few spoonfuls of organic matter.
"Foolish children!"
Her face contorted with miniature earthquakes and mudslides.
"You are so weary,"
Piper told the goddess, her voice radiating kindness and sympathy.
Eons of pain and disappointment weigh on you.
Silence!
The force of Gia's anger was so great, Jason momentarily lost control of the wind. He would have dropped into free fall, but Festus caught him and Piper in his other huge claw. Amazingly, Piper kept her focus.
Millennia of sorrow, she told Gia. Your husband Ouranos was abusive. Your grandchildren, the gods, overthrew your beloved children, the Titans. Your other children, the Cyclopes and the Hundred-Handed Ones, were thrown into Tartarus. You are so tired of heartache.
Lies!
Gia crumbled into a tornado of soil and grass, but her essence seemed to churn more sluggishly. If they gained any more altitude, the air would be too thin to breathe. Jason would be too weak to control it. Piper's talk of exhaustion affected him, too, sapping his strength, making his body feel heavy.
What you want, Piper continued, more than victory, more than revenge. You want rest. You are so weary, so incomprehensibly tired of the ungrateful mortals and immortals.
You do not speak for me! You cannot!
You want one thing,
Piper said soothingly, her voice resonating through Jason's bones.
One word. You want permission to close your eyes and forget your troubles. You want sleep!
Gia solidified into human form. Her head lolled. Her eyes closed. And she went limp in Festus's claw. Unfortunately, Jason started to black out too. The wind was dying. The storm dissipated. Dark spots danced in his eyes.
Leo!
Piper gasped for breath.
We only have a few seconds. My charm speak won't...
I know!
Leo looked like he was made of fire. Flames rippled beneath his skin, illuminating his skull. Festus steamed and glowed, his claws burning through Jason's shirt.
I can't contain the fire much longer. I'll vaporize her. Don't worry. But you guys need to leave.
No,
Jason said.
We have to stay with you. Piper's got the cure. Leo, you can't...
Hey!
Leo grinned, which was unnerving in the flames, his teeth like molten silver ingots.
I told you I had a plan. When are you going to trust me? And by the way, I love you guys.
Festus's claw opened, and Jason and Piper fell. Jason had no strength to stop it. He held on to Piper as she cried Leo's name, and they plummeted earthward. Festus became an indistinct ball of fire in the sky, a second sun, growing smaller and hotter. Then, in the corner of Jason's eye, a blazing comet streaked upward from the ground with a high-pitched, almost human scream. Just before Jason blacked out, the comet intercepted the ball of fire above them. The explosion turned the entire sky gold. Chapter 53. Nico. Nico had witnessed many forms of death. He didn't think anything could surprise him anymore. He was wrong. In the middle of the battle, Will Solace ran up to him and said one word in his ear. Octavian. That got Nico's full attention. He had hesitated when he had the chance to kill Octavian, but there was no way Nico would let that scumbag Augur escape justice.
Where?
Come on, Will said. Hurry. Nico turned to Jason, who was fighting next to him.
Jason, I have to go.
Then he plunged into the chaos, following Will. They passed Tyson and his Cyclopes, who were bellowing,
Bad dog! Bad dog!
As they bashed the heads of the Cynocephali. Grover Underwood and a team of satyrs danced around with their panpipes, playing harmonies so dissonant that the earthen-shelled ghosts cracked apart. Travis Stoll ran past, arguing with his brother.
What do you mean we set the landmines on the wrong hill?
Nico and Will were halfway down the hill when the ground trembled under their feet. Like everyone else, monster and demigod alike, they froze in horror and watched as the whirling column of earth erupted from the top of the next hill, and Gia appeared in all her glory. Then, something large and bronze swooped out of the sky.
Foomp!
Festus, the bronze dragon, snatched up the Earth Mother and soared away with her.
What? How?
Nico stammered.
I don't know,
Will said. But I doubt there's much we can do about that. We have other problems.
Will sprinted toward the nearest onager. As they got closer, Nico spotted Octavian furiously readjusting the machine's targeting levers.
The throwing arm was already primed with a full payload of imperial gold and explosives. The auger rushed about, tripping over gears and anchor spikes, fumbling with the ropes. Every so often, he glanced up at Festus the dragon.
Octavian!
Nico yelled. The auger spun, then backed up against the huge sphere of ammunition. His fine purple robes snagged on the trigger rope, but Octavian didn't notice. Fumes from the payload curled about him as if drawn to the imperial gold jewelry around his arms and neck, the golden wreath in his hair.
Oh, I see!
Octavian's laughter was brittle and quite insane.
Trying to steal my glory, eh? No, no, son of Pluto! I am the savior of Rome! I was promised!
Will raised his hand in a placating gesture.
Octavian, get away from the onager. That isn't safe.
Of course it's not! I will shoot Gia down with this machine!
Out of the corner of his eye, Nico saw Jason Grace rocket into the sky with Piper in his arms, flying straight toward Festus. Around the son of Jupiter, storm clouds gathered, swirling into a hurricane. Thunder boomed.
You see?
Octavian cried. The gold on his body was definitely smoking now, attracted to the catapult's payload like iron to a giant magnet.
The gods approve of my actions!
Jason is making that storm, Nico said. If you fire the onager, you'll kill him, and Piper, and...
Good!
Octavian yelled.
They're traitors! All traitors!
Listen to me, Will tried again. This is not what Apollo would want. Besides, your robes are...
You know nothing, Greekus!
Octavian wrapped his hand around the release lever.
I must act before they get any higher. Only an onager such as this can make the shot. I will single-handedly...
Centurion!
Said a voice behind him. From the back of the siege engine, Michael Cahale appeared. He had a large red knot on his forehead where Tyson had bonked him unconscious. He stumbled as he walked, but somehow he had found his way here from the shore, and along the way, he'd picked up a sword and shield.
Michael!
Octavian shrieked with glee.
Excellent! Guard me while I fire this onager! Then we will kill these Greek-eye together!
Michael Cahale took in the scene, his boss's robes tangled in the trigger rope, Octavian's jewelry fuming from proximity to the imperial gold ammunition. He glanced up at the dragon, now high in the air, surrounded by rings of storm clouds like the circles of an archery target. Then he scowled at Nico. Nico readied his own sword. Surely Michael Cahale would warn his leader to step away from the onager. Surely he would attack.
Are you certain, Octavian?
Asked the son of Venus.
Yes!
Are you absolutely certain?
Yes, you fool! I will be remembered as the savior of Rome. Now keep them away while I destroy Gia. Octavian, don't!
Will pleaded.
We can't allow you...
Will!
Nico said.
We can't stop him!
Solace stared at him in disbelief, but But Nico remembered his father's words in the Chapel of Bones. Some deaths cannot be prevented. Octavian's eyes gleamed.
That's right, son of Pluto! You are helpless to stop me! It is my destiny! Kahale, stand guard!
As you wish.
Michael moved in front of the machine, interposing himself between Octavian and the two Greek demigods.
Centurion, do what you must.
Octavian turned to release the catch.
A good friend to the last!
Nico almost lost his nerve. If the Onager really did fire true, if it scored a hit on Festus the dragon, and Nico allowed his friends to be hurt or killed, but he stayed where he was. For once, he decided to trust the wisdom of his father. Some deaths should not be prevented.
Goodbye, Gia! Octavian yelled. Goodbye, Jason Grace the traitor!
Octavian cut the release wire with his auger's knife, and he disappeared. The catapult arm sprang upward faster than Nico's eye could follow, launching Octavian along with the ammunition. The auger's scream faded until he was simply part of the fiery comet soaring skyward.
Goodbye, Octavian, Michael Kahale said.
He glared at Will and Nico one last time, as if daring them to speak. Then he turned his back and trudged away. Nico could have lived with Octavian's end. He might even have said, good riddance. But his heart sank as the comet kept gaining altitude. It disappeared into the storm clouds, and the sky exploded in a dome of fire. Chapter 54. Nico. The next day there weren't many answers. After the explosion, Piper and Jason, free-falling and unconscious, were plucked out of the sky by giant eagles and brought to safety. But Leo did not reappear. The entire Hephaestus cabin scoured the valley, finding bits and pieces of the Argo II's broken hull, but no sign of Festus the dragon or his master. All the monsters had been destroyed or scattered. Greek and Roman casualties were heavy, but not nearly as bad as they might have been. Overnight, the satyrs and nymphs disappeared into the woods for a convocation of the cloven elders. In the morning, Grover Underwood reappeared to announce that they could not sense the Earth Mother's presence. Nature was more or less back to normal. Apparently, Jason, Piper, and Leo's plan worked. Gia had been separated from her source of power, charmed to sleep, and then atomized in the combined explosion of Leo's fire and Octavian's man-made comet. An immortal could never die, but now Gia would be like her husband, Ouranos. The Earth would continue to function as normal, just as the sky did, but Gia was now so dispersed and powerless that she could never again form a consciousness. At least, that was the hope. Octavian would be remembered for saving Rome by hurling himself into the sky in a fiery ball of death, but it was Leo Valdez who had made the real sacrifice. The victory celebration at camp was muted due to grief, not just for Leo, but also for the many others who had died in battle. Shrouded demigods, both Greek and Roman, were burnt at the campfire, and Chiron asked Nico to oversee the burial rites. Nico agreed immediately. He was grateful for the opportunity to honor the dead. Even the hundreds of spectators didn't bother him. The hardest part was afterward, when Nico and the six demigods from the Argo II met on the porch of the big house. Jason hung his head, even his glasses lost in shadow. We should have been there at the end. We could have helped Leo.
It's not right, Piper agreed, wiping away her tears. All that work getting the physician's cure for nothing.
Hazel broke down crying.
Piper, where's the cure? Bring it out.
Bewildered, Piper reached into her belt pouch.
She produced the chamois cloth package, but when she unfolded the cloth, it was empty. All eyes turned to Hazel.
How?
Annabeth asked. Frank put his arm around Hazel.
In Delos, Leo pulled the two of us aside. He pleaded with us to help him.
Through her tears, Hazel explained how she had switched the physician's cure for an illusion, a trick of the mist, so that Leo could keep the real vial. Frank told them about Leo's plan to destroy a weakened Gia with one massive fiery explosion. After talking with Nike and Apollo, Leo had been certain that such an explosion would kill any mortal within a quarter mile, so he knew he would have to get far away from everyone.
He wanted to do it alone, Frank said. He thought there would be a slim chance that he, a son of Hephaestus, could survive the fire, but if anyone was with him... He said that Hazel and I, being Roman, would understand about sacrifice, but he knew the rest of you would never allow it.
At first, the others looked angry, like they wanted to scream and throw things. But as Frank and Hazel talked, the group's rage seemed to dissipate. It was hard to be mad at Frank and Hazel when they were both crying. Also, the plan sounded exactly like the sneaky, twisted, ridiculously annoying and noble sort of thing Leo Valdez would do. Finally, Piper let out a sound somewhere between a sob and a laugh. If he were here right now, I would kill him. How was he planning to take the cure? He was alone.
Maybe he found a way, Percy said. This is Leo we're talking about. He might come back any minute. Then we can take turns strangling him.
Nico and Hazel exchanged looks. They both knew better, but they said nothing. The next day, the second since the battle, Romans and Greeks worked side by side to clean up the war zone and tend the wounded. Blackjack, the Pegasus, was recovering nicely from his arrow wound. Guido had decided to adopt Reyna as his human. Reluctantly, Llewellyn had agreed to turn her new pet piglets back into Romans. Will Solace hadn't spoken with Nico since the encounter at the Onager. The son of Apollo spent most of his time in the infirmary, but whenever Nico saw him running across camp to fetch more medical supplies or make a house call on some wounded demigod, he felt a strange twinge of melancholy. No doubt Will Solace thought Nico was a monster now, for letting Octavian kill himself. The Romans bivouacked next to the strawberry fields, where they insisted on building their standard field camp. The Greeks pitched in to help them raise the dirt walls and dig the trenches. Nico had never seen anything stranger or cooler. Dakota shared Kool-Aid with the kids from the Dionysus cabin. The children of Hermes and Mercury laughed and told stories and brazenly stole things from just about everyone. Reyna, Annabeth, and Piper were inseparable, roaming the camp as a trio to check on the progress of the repairs. Chiron, escorted by Frank and Hazel, inspected the Roman troops and praised them for their bravery. By evening, the general mood had improved somewhat. The dining hall pavilion had never been so crowded. The Romans were welcomed like old friends. Coach Hedge roamed among the demigods, beaming and holding his baby boy and saying,
"Hey, you want to meet Chuck? This is my boy, Chuck."
The Aphrodite and Athena girls alike cooed over the feisty little satyr baby, who waved his pudgy fists, kicked his tiny hooves, and bleated, "Bah! Bah!" Clarice, who had been named the baby's godmother, trailed behind the coach like a bodyguard and occasionally muttered,
all right, give the kid some space."
At announcement time, Chiron stepped forward and raised his goblet.
"Out of every tragedy," he said, "comes new strength. Today, we thank the gods for this victory. To the gods!"
The demigods all joined the toast, but their enthusiasm seemed muted. Nico understood the feeling. "We saved the gods again, And now we're supposed to thank them? Then Chiron said,
To new friends!
Hundreds of demigod voices echoed across the hills. At the campfire, everyone kept looking at the stars, as if they expected Leo to come back in some dramatic, last-minute surprise. Maybe he'd swoop in, jump off Festus's back, and launch into corny jokes. It didn't happen. After a few songs, Reyna and Frank were called to the front. They got a thunderous round of applause from both the Greeks and Romans. Up on Half-Blood Hill, the Athena Parthenos glowed more brightly in moonlight, as if to signal, these kids are all right.
Tomorrow, Reyna said, we Romans must return home. We appreciate your hospitality, especially since we almost killed you.
You almost got killed,
Annabeth corrected.
Whatever, Chase.
Ooh,
the crowd said as one. Then everybody started laughing and pushing each other around. Even Nico had to smile.
Anyway, Frank took over, Reyna and I agree this marks a new era of friendship between the camps.
Reyna clapped him on the back.
That's right. For hundreds of years, the gods tried to separate us to keep us from fighting. But there's a better kind of peace. Cooperation.
Piper stood up from the audience.
Are you sure your mom is a war goddess?
Yes, McLean, Reyna said. I still intend to fight a lot of battles, but from now on, we fight together.
That got a big cheer. Jong raised his hand for quiet.
You'll all be welcome at Camp Jupiter. We've come to an agreement with Chiron, a free exchange between the camps. Weekend visits, training programs, and of course, emergency aid in times of need.
And parties? Asked Dakota.
Hear, hear, said Connor Stoll.
Reyna spread her arms.
That goes without saying. We Romans invented parties.
Another big, oh!
So thank you, Reyna concluded. All of you. We could have chosen hatred and war. Instead, we found acceptance and friendship.
Then she did something so unexpected, Nico would later think he dreamed it. She walked up to Nico, who was standing to one side in the shadows, as usual. She grabbed his hand and pulled him gently into the firelight.
We had one home, she said. Now we have two.
She gave Nico a big hug, and the crowd roared with approval. For once, Nico didn't feel like pulling away. He buried his face in Reyna's shoulder and blinked the tears out of his eyes. Chapter 55. Nico. That night, Nico slept in the Hades cabin. He'd never had any desire to use the place before, but now he shared it with Hazel, which made all the difference. It made him happy to live with a sister again, even if it was only for a few days, and even if Hazel insisted on partitioning her side of the room with sheets for privacy, so it looked like a quarantine zone. Just before curfew, Frank came to visit and spend a few minutes talking with Hazel in hushed tones. Nico tried to ignore them. He stretched out in his bunk, which resembled a coffin, a polished mahogany frame, brass railings, blood-red velvet pillows and blankets. Nico hadn't been present when they built this cabin. He definitely had not suggested these bunks. Apparently, somebody thought the children of Hades were vampires, not demigods. Finally, Frank knocked on the wall next to Nico's bed. Nico looked over. Jong stood so tall now. He seemed so Roman.
Hey, Frank said. We'll be leaving in the morning. Just wanted to tell you thanks.
Nico sat up in his bunk.
You did great, Frank. It's been an honor.
Frank smiled.
Honestly,
I'm kind of surprised I lived through it. The whole magic firewood thing.
Nico nodded. Hazel had told him all about the piece of firewood that controlled Frank's lifeline. Nico took it as a good sign that Frank could talk about it openly now.
I can't see the future, Nico told him, but I can often tell when people are close to death. You're not. I don't know when that piece of firewood will burn up. Eventually, we all run out of firewood, but it won't be soon, Preeter Jong. You and Hazel, you've got a lot more adventures ahead of you. You're just getting started. Be good to my sister, okay?
Hazel walked up next to Frank and laced her hand with his. Nico, you're not threatening my boyfriend, are you? The two of them looked so comfortable together it made Nico glad. But it also caused an ache in his heart. A ghostly pain, like an old war wound throbbing in bad weather.
No need for threats, Nico said. Frank's a good guy. Or bear, or bulldog, or...
Oh, stop. Hazel laughed. Then she kissed Frank. See you in the morning.
Yeah, Frank said. Nico, you sure you won't come with us? You'll always have a place in New Rome.
Thanks, Preeter. Reyna said the same thing, but... No.
I hope I'll see you again.
Oh, you will, Nico promised. I'm going to be the flower boy at your wedding, right?
Frank got flustered, cleared his throat, and shuffled off, running into the door jamb on the way out. Hazel crossed her arms.
You just had to tease him about that.
She sat on Nico's bunk. For a while, they just stayed there in comfortable silence. Siblings. Children from the past. Children of the underworld.
I'm going to miss you, Nico said.
Hazel leaned over and rested her head on his shoulder.
You too, big brother. You will visit.
He tapped the new officer's badge that gleamed on her shirt.
Centurion of the 5th cohort now. Congratulations. Are there rules against centurions dating praetors?
Shh, Hazel said. It'll be a lot of work getting the Legion back in shape, repairing the damage Octavian did. Dating regulations will be the least of my worries.
You've come so far. You're not the same girl I brought to Camp Jupiter. Your power with the mist, your confidence.
It's all thanks to you.
No, Nico said. Getting a second life is one thing. Making it a better life, that's the trick.
As soon as he said it, Nico realized he could have been talking about himself. He decided not to bring that up. Hazel sighed.
A second life. I just wish...
She didn't need to finish her thought. For the past 2 days, Leo's disappearance had hovered like a cloud over the whole camp. Hazel and Nico had been reluctant to join the speculation about what had happened to him.
You felt his death, didn't you?
Hazel's eyes were watery. Her voice was small.
Yeah, Nico admitted. But I don't know, Hazel. Something about it was... different.
He couldn't have taken the physician's cure. Nothing could have survived that explosion. I thought I was helping Leo. I messed up.
No, it is not your fault.
But Nico wasn't quite so ready to forgive himself. He'd spent the last 48 hours replaying the scene with Octavian at the catapult, wondering if he'd done the wrong thing. Perhaps the explosive power of that projectile had helped destroy Gia. Or perhaps it had unnecessarily cost Leo Valdez his life.
I just wish he hadn't died alone, Hazel murmured. There was no one with him, no one to give him that cure. There's not even a body to bury.
Her voice broke. Nico put his arm around her. He held her as she wept. Eventually, she fell asleep from exhaustion. Nico tucked her into his own bed and kissed her forehead. Then he went to the shrine of Hades in the corner, a little table decorated with bones and jewels.
"I suppose," he said, "there's a first time for everything."
He knelt and prayed silently for his father's guidance. Chapter 56. Nico. At dawn, he was still awake when someone rapped at the door. He turned, registering a face with blonde hair, and for a split second, he thought it was Will Solis. When Nico realized it was Jason, he was disappointed. Then he felt angry with himself for feeling that way. He hadn't talked to Will since the battle. The Apollo kids had been too busy with the injured. Besides, Will probably blamed Nico for what happened to Octavian. Why wouldn't he? Nico had basically permitted whatever that was. Murder by consensus. A gruesome suicide. By now, Will Solis realized just how creepy and revolting Nico DeAngelo was. Of course, Nico didn't care what he thought. But still.
"You okay?" Jason asked. "You look fine,"
Nico snapped. Then he softened his tone.
"If you're looking for Hazel, she's still asleep."
Jason mouthed, "Oh," and gestured for Nico to come outside. Nico stepped into the sunlight, blinking and disoriented.
"Ugh."
Perhaps the cabin's designers had been right about the children of Hades being like vampires. He was not a morning person. Jason didn't look as though he'd slept any better. His hair had a cowlick on one side, and his new glasses sat crookedly on his nose. Nico resisted the urge to reach out and straighten them. Jason pointed to the strawberry fields, where the Romans were breaking camp. "It was strange to see them here. Now it'll be strange not seeing them."
"Do you regret not going with them?" Nico asked.
Jason's smile was lopsided.
"A little, but I'll be going back and forth between the camps a lot. I have some shrines to build." "I heard. The Senate plans to elect you Pontifex Maximus."
Jason shrugged.
"I don't care about the title so much. I do care about making sure the gods are remembered. I don't want them fighting out of jealousy anymore, or taking out their frustrations on demigods."
"They're gods," Nico said.
"That's their nature."
"Maybe, but I can try to make it better. I guess Leo would say I'm acting like a mechanic, doing preventative maintenance." Nico sensed Jason's sorrow like an oncoming storm.
"You know you couldn't have stopped Leo. There's nothing you could have done differently. He knew what had to happen."
I guess. I don't suppose you can tell if he's still..."
"He's gone," Nico said.
"I'm sorry. I wish I could tell you otherwise, but I sensed his death." Jason stared into the distance. Nico felt guilty for squashing his hopes. He was almost tempted to mention his own doubts. What a different sensation Leo's death had given him. As if Leo's soul had invented its own way into the underworld. Something that involved lots of gears, levers, and steam-powered pistons. Nevertheless, Nico was sure Leo Valdez had died. And death was death. It wouldn't be fair to give Jason false expectations. In the distance, the Romans were picking up their gear and toting it across the hill. On the other side, so Nico had heard, a fleet of black SUVs waited to transport the Legion cross-country back to California. Nico guessed that would be an interesting road trip. He imagined the entire 12th Legion in the drive-through lane at Burger King. He imagined some hapless monster terrorizing a random demigod in Kansas, only to find itself surrounded by several dozen carloads of heavily armored Romans.
"Ella the Harpy is going with them, you know," Jason said.
She and Tyson, even Rachel Elizabeth Dare. They're going to work together to try to reconstruct the Sibylline books.
That should be interesting.
Could take years, Jason said. But with the voice of Delphi extinguished...
Rachel still can't see the future?
Jason shook his head. I wish I knew what happened to Apollo in Athens. Maybe Artemis will get him out of trouble with Zeus, and the power of prophecy will work again. But for now, those Sibylline books might be our only way to get guidance for quests.
Personally, Nico said, I could do without prophecies or quests for a while.
You've got a point. He straightened his glasses. Look, Nico, the reason I wanted to talk to you... I know what you said back at Auster's palace. I know you already turned down a place at Camp Jupiter. I probably can't change your mind about leaving Camp Half-Blood, but I have to... I'm staying.
Jason blinked.
What?
At Camp Half-Blood. The Hades cabin needs a head counselor. Have you seen the decor? It's disgusting. I'll have to remodel. And someone needs to do the burial rites properly, since demigods insist on dying heroically.
That's fantastic. Dude. Jason opened his arms for a hug, then froze. Right. No touching. Sorry. Nico grunted.
I suppose we can make an exception.
Jason squeezed him so hard, Nico thought his ribs would crack.
Oh, man, Jason said. Wait till I tell Piper. Hey, since I'm all alone in my cabin, too, you and I can share a table at the dining hall. We can team up for Capture the Flag and sing-along contests and...
Are you trying to scare me away?
Sorry. Whatever you say, Nico. I'm just glad.
The funny thing was, Nico believed him. Nico happened to glance toward the cabins and saw someone waving at him. Will Solis stood in the doorway of the Apollo cabin, a stern look on his face. He pointed to the ground at his feet like, you, here, now.
Jason, Nico said, would you excuse me?
So where were you? Will demanded. He was wearing a green surgeon shirt with jeans and flip-flops, which was probably not standard hospital protocol.
What do you mean?
Nico asked. I've been stuck in the infirmary for like 2 days. You don't come by? You don't offer to help?
What? Why would you want a son of Hades in the same room with people you're trying to heal? Why would anyone want that?
You can't help out a friend? Maybe cut bandages? Bring me a soda or a snack? Or just a simple, how's it going, Will? You don't think I could stand to see a friendly face?
What? My face?
The words simply didn't make sense together. Friendly face. Nico D'Angelo. You're so dense, Will noted. I hope you got over that nonsense about leaving Camp Half-Blood.
I did. I mean, I'm staying.
Good. So you may be dense, but you're not an idiot.
How can you even talk to me like that? Don't you know I can summon zombies and skeletons and...
Right now, you couldn't summon a wishbone without melting into a puddle of darkness, D'Angelo, Will said.
I told you, no more underworldly stuff. Doctor's orders.
You owe me at least 3 days of rest in the infirmary, starting now. Nico felt like 100 skeletal butterflies were resurrecting in his stomach.
3 days? I suppose that would be okay.
Good. Now. A loud whoop cut through the air. Over by the hearth in the center of the common, Percy was grinning at something Annabeth had just told him. Annabeth laughed and playfully slapped his arm.
I'll be right back, Nico told Will. Promise on the sticks and everything.
He walked over to Percy and Annabeth, who were both still grinning like crazy.
"Hey, man," Percy said. "Annabeth just told me some good news. Sorry if I got a little loud."
"We're going to spend our